Domestic oil production has surged in recent years in places like North Dakota, but it may come as a bit of a surprise to learn that Albany, New York, among other places, has become a hub for some of that oil as it travels by train. But the safety of transporting crude oil over the nation's rail networks has come into question recently after a series of high-profile derailments. Joining us now is Russell Gold, who is senior energy correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. He's also the author of The Boom, How Fracking Ignited the American Energy Revolution and Changed the World. And I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show.
Thanks for having me.
So you're right that rail officials don't like to talk about the surge in the amount of oil being transported by train
right.
through many large cities. Is that something that is understandable?
Well, I think they need to be a little bit more forthcoming. This is something that neighborhoods and first responders need to be more aware of and to be more in the loop about. A couple days ago, on Martin Luther King's birthday, there was a train in downtown Philadelphia, just maybe a quarter mile away from Center City, that derailed. It was carrying crude while crossing the Schuylkill River. And fortunately, there were no ruptures, there was no fire and explosions, but I was taking a look at where that train was coming from, and it was running right through a very crowded neighborhood, maybe comparable to a neighborhood in Brooklyn or something like that. And you know, in order to prepare for what could happen, whether it's a spill or an explosion, a certain level of transparency and discussion really needs to take place, and I think the derailments over the last few months have really driven that home.
And a new analysis of government data has found that more than 1.15 million gallons of crude oil was spilled from rail cars last year, in 2013. In comparison, only 800,000 gallons of crude spilled from trains in total over the last 38 years. So we're seeing a huge spike, aren't we?
Right. And I think that's really being driven just by the volume of crude that's being moved by rail right now. I was looking at some information this morning. Back in 1996, when the federal government was writing rules for spill response, there were six tanker cars that were in use for oil transport. Six. Not trains, just individual tanker cars. There are now trains with 100 tanker cars crisscrossing the country, dozens of them. They're well over 1,000 tanker cars in use. So the growth has just been nothing short of phenomenal. This industry didn't exist 10 years ago, and now it's quite active.
How much of it is the result of the surge in production from North Dakota's Bakken Shale?
Oh, almost all of it's from the Bakken. What happened in North Dakota is remarkable. Back in 2008, there was very, very little oil production there. Then the companies figured out a combination of using fracking and vertical wells, and all of a sudden we're up right about 1 million barrels a day. That is a very large oil field, just to kind of give you a sense that the big Alaska North Slope oil field produces half as much oil right now as North Dakota does. North Dakota could apply for membership in OPEC. It is producing more than two, maybe three OPEC members right now. And the oil field and the number of wells grew so quickly that production got out way ahead of infrastructure. There were no pipelines. There's a lot of natural gas that's being flared because, quite frankly, there's just not enough pipelines out there to move the natural gas to where it needs to be.
So we're just burning it off?
The natural gas, absolutely. And, this is happening quite a bit in North Dakota right now. They're trying to rein it back in, but the oil they're producing is so valuable that they don't want to stop and slow down and wait for gas pipelines to be put in place. But there are also no oil pipelines in place, or not enough up there. And so a few years ago, a small Houston company came up with the idea, well, let's put it on rail cars and start moving it around that way. And it caught on incredibly quickly. And right now, that is the primary way that this oil is coming out of North Dakota. And increasingly, we're also seeing it down in South Texas and in West Texas.
Well, the Keystone XL pipeline is unpopular in many parts of the country, but isn't one of the arguments being used in favor of it that it would cut down on the amount of oil being shipped by rail?
Oh, absolutely.
Although a lot of that oil would be coming from Canada, so is that separate from the Bakken?
Well, yeah, the Canadian oil sands or tar sands is separate from the Bakken. They're very different kinds of oil, very different ways of getting it out of the ground. But ultimately, it's all heading in the same direction. It's heading from the middle, the sort of the northern middle of the country, mostly down towards the Gulf Coast, where there are lots of refineries. What you have to understand that we've built up, when I say we, the United States has built up an oil system where the refineries, which turn the crude oil into gasoline and diesel, they're all on the coast because they were built on the coast because we got our oil from overseas. Now all of a sudden we're getting our oil from the middle of the country and up into Canada and Alberta and North Dakota and Texas increasingly. And all of a sudden we've got to figure out how to get that to the coast. And the answer is not pipelines. Those take too long to build. There's tons of community opposition. The answer's been, let's just put it on tanker cars and ship them by train.
Well, couldn't we just build refineries up near the Great Lakes and put them on ships there?
Well, we could, but I don't think you're going to find anyone who's willing to do that. We have a very large refining system in the United States, and it's sort of in full use right now. We don't have a lot of extra capacity. Refineries would cost billions of dollars to build, and no one wants to build a new one when we have old ones that are still functional and, you know, spent the money on it. People want to make a profit off them.
Well,
they don't want to close them down.
On the other hand, pipelines aren't cheap either, but have they been proven to be safer than the railroad method?
I think by and large, both are fairly safe methods. Most of the crude that comes out of the Bakken or other places, whether by pipeline or by rail, are safe and get to their destination. I think by and large, pipelines have proven to be safer over time. They just move more volume. The real problem is that both pipelines and rail can have these catastrophic failures. And we can see in pipelines, sometimes there'll be just enormous spills, sometimes undetected. We saw them up in Kalamazoo and down in Magnolia, Arkansas in recent years. And the problem that's turning out with rail is that the crude coming out of the Bakken is extraordinarily explosive. And that when there's a derailment, this is not a minor incident. This can result in enormous fireballs, like we saw in Castle, North Dakota at the end of last year. And the runaway train that ended up in Quebec, incinerating the downtown of a small town up there called Lac Mégantique, and 47 people were killed. So these are rare instances, but extraordinarily, when they happen, they have very big results.
Three very terrible explosions after rail accidents just in the last 7 months. Now, You said that the oil from the Bakken is particularly explosive. What makes it so explosive? Isn't oil oil?
Well, that's a great question. Oil is not oil. There are lots of flavors, lots of different varieties of oil. Everything you mentioned before, the Canadian oil sands oil, that is, it's almost tar-like. It barely moves. The oil that comes out of the Bakken practically looks like gasoline. Very, very different types. But to answer your other question, what makes this so explosive? That's sort of a mystery right now, right at the heart of why these trains are exploding. A lot of people are trying to figure out exactly why it is when a train with oil gets into an accident, derails, it doesn't just light on fire, it explodes. I mean,
just like in the movies when a car goes over off the road. I always wondered, well, how many times does a car actually explode? Probably a lot less than a railroad car that has fallen off the rails.
True. But cars have refined gasoline in them. That is very explosive. Crude oil is not nearly as explosive. It doesn't get explosive until it's refined, until it's purified like that. And so the real question is, why is this crude oil acting more like a gasoline or a jet fuel than a crude oil that we typically know? There are a lot of people, investigators, and trying to get to the bottom of that right now. And I think part of the answer really is that this crude that's coming out of the Bakken just has a lot of gases in it. It's a very different and light type of crude, and it's proving to be very difficult to contain when there is a derailment.
I'm talking with Russell Gold, who is a senior energy correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. How did Albany, New York, come to be a hub for oil produced in North Dakota?
Well, very simply, it had underutilized rail, and it had access to the sea, and they put it together. So what happens is Canadian Pacific, a big Canadian company, moves the crude out of North Dakota. They move it up through Montreal and then straight down into Albany. And right there were facilities where you could take it off the trains and put it onto barges and ships. And so that crude is transloaded in Albany. And I should mention that as it goes into the port of Albany, it comes right down the main highway, about half mile from the state capital. So then it's transloaded and it's put onto barges and taken straight down the Hudson past Manhattan and usually ends up in northern Jersey, where there are some refineries, and then sometimes taken by pipeline down to Philadelphia, where there are more refineries.
So it's going down one of the most populous areas in the country.
Without a question.
Is it of economic benefit to Albany or any of the parts down the Hudson through New York? How close is it to where I am right now? Do you know?
Well, I guess
I'm in downtown Manhattan.
Downtown, well, it's going right down the Hudson. I mean, if you can just sort of imagine a barge moving halfway between Jersey City and Midtown Manhattan, that's where it's going right now. I mean, look out, you know, for people on the west side, look out the windows, and you should be able to see one or two of these large barges full of crude every day.
Well, does Albany benefit economically from this?
Well, you know, I talked to some of the people up there. I talked to the director of the Port of Albany, and they're talking about some more jobs, not a huge number, but they are bringing in more jobs. They have more security. That's been a requirement now because every time they have a ship in port, they have to have 24-hour security, so they've had to increase that. So there's been some hiring. But other than that, no, there hasn't been a huge investment right now. So it's really more of a convenience in this large infrastructure we have. The convenience being this is a place where you can get the crude to by rail and then get it on the ships and get it where it needs to be, whether that's Bayway, New Jersey, or down to Philadelphia, or even in some cases up the coast to St. John's and New Brunswick.
A firm called Global Partners has applied to build a rail-to-river facility capable of handling one oil train per day in New Windsor, which is about 65 miles up the Hudson from New York City. How large would those facilities be?
Well, that's about the size of what we have in Albany. And, in fact, Global Partners runs the main facility up in Albany. One train a day, that's about 100 cars. You're probably talking on the order of 700 barrels per car, so that's a significant amount. I think I did the calculations. It was nearly 3 million gallons of crude oil per train. So it's a fairly large facility. You can't empty that quickly and safely without building a large transloading facility.
Why, then, are gas prices so high? We're talking about a lot of oil here.
A lot of oil. Well, actually, gas prices are not as high as many other places in the world. I mean, ultimately,
they tax their oil. We just seem to be paying because the oil companies, in fact, one gas station to the next decides on how much we should pay.
Well, ultimately, the biggest cost of making a gallon of gasoline is what your cost of crude is. And the easiest way to understand it is that there is a lot of rising demand for crude around the world. A lot of countries that are increasingly, people want to drive cars, using more crude, and it's as that demand rises, the industry has struggled to find enough supply. Now, the United States is a little bit different. We've managed here to increase our supply, but still, you know, it's not enough to really drive down prices to basement. And I should say, when you're talking about North Dakota and drilling wells in North Dakota, this is expensive oil. This is not cheap oil. This is not some gusher in Texas where you put one well down and just thousands and thousands of barrels come up. Each of the wells up in the Bakken might cost $10 million. So companies are spending a lot of money to find that oil, and therefore they're not going to be doing that unless they're getting close to $100 per barrel prices. If prices were to drop considerably from where they are right now, I think you'd probably see a lot of activity up in North Dakota just quietly dribble out and slow down.
Well, I've been hearing for years that most of the oil that's drilled in Alaska winds up being exported to Asia. Is most of this oil also being exported?
No, actually, you can't export oil from the United States. There's been a congressional ban on it for years, with a couple of small exceptions. So all this oil ends up going into refineries, as I say, on the East Coast, some on the West Coast, down to California, a lot down increasingly into the Gulf Coast. What we're doing as a country is exporting more and more refined products.
Diesel. That's what I meant.
Yeah, no, we export quite a bit of diesel right now to Latin America, and that's been it's sort of a boost to the activities down in the refineries. So that clearly is going on, something that was unthinkable a few years ago. I mean, we were an importer nation. We brought in oil. We brought in energy we need. That really has changed. It's been a remarkable change that, quite frankly, very, very few people, if any, saw coming.
I'm assuming that these oil trains are designed not to explode. What kind of safety measures do they have? Doesn't some in some cases, hasn't the oil actually corroded the metal tanks?
Well, that's a great question. There's certainly a lot of focus right now on the corrosivity, how much hydrogen sulfide are in these, and whether the thin steel walls are being corroded. The other issue is that there's a lot of talk right now about whether these tanker cars that most listeners will probably recognize, they're called DOT 111s, whether they're really up to the job. And in fact, there's been an effort both in the from the rail industry and regulators to improve, to sort of beef up and put more armor on these cars to make them more puncture resistant and more resistant to thermal rupture, basically to being in such a hot place that they'll buckle. But one of the things that's happened is that the industry of moving crude by rail has grown so quickly, faster than the regulations have been able to keep up. So a lot of the fight right now is on whether if you change the rules, do you grandfather in all of these thousands of new tank cars that have been built in the last few years, or do you force them to be retrofitted? And the oil industry has really put its foot down and said, no, we are not going to retrofit. And that's potentially a big fight, because if the federal government comes out and says, look, you need better armor, you need better plating on these to move them around the country, then the oil industry has already said, no, we're going to fight this. We don't want to spend all that money. So, you know, keep an eye on this space. I think the fights are going to continue to roll out, because this has been a very lucrative portion of the industry.
And last year, we spoke to two Midwestern mayors who were suing to keep these trains out of their towns. Have others sued as well? And what's been the situation with that?
Well, we haven't really seen a lot of new lawsuits recently, mostly because the federal law is pretty clear. This is interstate commerce. It's very difficult for states or cities to prevent this from coming through. What has happened is that there's been voluntarily the rail industry and the oil industry have begun to say, we will look at rerouting, and they're going to take the next few weeks to look at rerouting to try to figure out ways to get some of these trains and not put them straight through downtown Chicago, perhaps not put them through Philadelphia. But I think there are perhaps some changes that can be made, and I'm certainly not an expert on rail routes. But it also occurs to me that a lot of these train tracks historically have gone through cities, and they've done that to enable commerce, and it's going to be very difficult to move these trains out away from cities. So that seems like a sticky issue that I'm not quite sure how it's going to be resolved.
Now, fracking, which we have very little time, but fracking, which you have written about, has mm-hmm. produced a lot of natural gas. Is that also being moved by rail?
No, you can't
do that?
Move natural gas. Yeah, it's way you need to pressurize it. Sometimes you'll see they cool natural gas down to, I forget, it's a negative 100 Fahrenheit plus, and you'll put it on ships, basically giant thermoses. That's how you move it across
Russell,
the ocean.
Russell, I got to leave it there, unfortunately.
Sure.
Russell Gold is a senior energy correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Thank you so much for being on our show today. It's been fascinating.
Thank you. Pleasure.